Save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust 5-in-1 Spray Paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial. Use it on a wide range of wood or metal projects for long-lasting results. Choose from over 50 color options available now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
My next guest works as a consultant oncologist in the Mater Hospital, but he's also found the time to become an established, successful author. Award-winning, nominated writer Austin Duffy joined us last year on the show, and he joins us again with a new fascinating story. This time his writing depicts an even more terrifying tale, the trials and tribulations of being a medical intern on a night shift. And it's fiction in theory, but based very soundly on fact, I suspect. Austin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat, and thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Now, this is a book. When you open it first, I mean, it reads like a thriller. You've got these three, I was going to say Egypts, walking around. There are three very inexperienced interns, and they're on duty. And the whole thing kind of shook my confidence in the system.
Oh, God, sorry about that. Well, yeah, I wanted to, I suppose, as you mentioned, I was an intern myself. It must be 20 years ago now at this stage. And I guess I wanted to get across to the reader that sense of those first early days when you're actually stepping out into the grown-up world, you know, having left college and university behind.
So explain, before we get into the experiences, what the stages are in your medical education. You know, because you've got a lot of theory behind you, and you may even have, you know, done a post-mortem on a cadaver. I don't know.
Right. Something like that. And had a really good time at college where you're hanging out with your friends and attending lectures and all of that. Acquiring theoretical knowledge, which, yes, on the 1st of July of the intern year, you quickly realise the limits of that sort of theoretical knowledge, where you're sort of handed a page or a white coat and off you go. I mean, there are supports, of course, there for you. There are colleagues that you can call on, but you basically, you know, even if those supports are there, you might not feel that in yourself because you're nervous. You're very conscious of how little experiential or real knowledge you actually possess. And your theoretical knowledge that you spent all these years acquiring is not much of a crutch for you to lean on.
When you describe these three people, and one of them, Linda, is a lot more kind of ballsy
right.
than the other two. You know, one of the guys goes around and he has information with him. You know, he's got books that he's going to consult on various matters.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the possibility something might go wrong somewhere in one of the wards. And you're told, don't ring the registrar at all. He doesn't want to hear, or she doesn't want to hear from you. And there are certain people, you daren't ring them. It's the middle of the night, and the last thing you want to do is get them out of their on-call plank that they're sleeping on.
Right. Well, that was one, you're referring to one villain in the piece for sure. And thankfully, they're not all like that, you know. And culture has thankfully changed and moved on a little bit. And I'm a consultant myself now, so I'm at the other end of the totem pole. And I like to think that my junior staff can call me at any time of the day or night. But yeah, I mean, I suppose that was there to a certain extent, maybe back in the day, you know. And even if it wasn't, the reality was that in these junior folks' perception, they felt alone, and they felt uncertain. They had an imposter syndrome where they really were thrust into this job that they didn't really, they were only getting to grips with and flailing around. Yeah. And I wanted to get at that sort of uncertainty.
It's a bit like, you know, when you're teaching a child to ride a bike, at some point you've got to let go of the saddle.
Right.
And they've got to go on two wheels. So in a sense, this process is a bit like that they've got to throw you in the deep end. If they keep holding your hand, you're never going to think really independently. You have to be forced to be. but we are the patients and we're at the other end of this process.
Yeah, that's true for sure. So you want a mix. You know, there is obviously a progression within your career where you start off, you know, not very experienced, very junior, as we've been discussing. And then you sort of undergo this journey really of discovering yourself and learning through experience. And there's not really much of a substitute for that, you know, but absolutely there need to be guardrails there, and there needs to be a culture of being able to ask and seek help. And I think that's really important, you know, and it's a really important message, particularly, you know, when we have all this burnout in the medical profession and people, you know, it's a stressful job, you know.
Yeah. And we've been talking about it on the program, you know, where empathy has died. But in a sense, even reading your book at the beginning, that they're not thinking necessarily of the individual patient. It's, you know, the blood clot in Ward 2 or John's or wherever it might be, or Sir Patrick's ward, whatever it might be, and that there's a depersonalization of it. And maybe that's a necessary thing, that you've got to see the patient primarily as a problem you've got to try and fix, and then secondly as a person.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the way it is depicted in the group, although I don't think it's necessary. I mean, I think it's more that that's a function of people being under stress and strain and just being overwhelmed, you know, and that's unfortunately what can happen, you know, and is one of the main contributors to medical burnout, you know, which results in this sort of depersonalization. And I think that that's what we need to avoid at all cost. I mean, the best cure for that, or the best remedy for that, is to allow people, you know, it might sound paradoxical, but actually to give them the space to actually, you know, have a deeper involvement and a deeper engagement.
In other words, more
patient.
Resources, more time.
Yeah. And because, we, you know, as I mean, this book isn't a polemic in any sense. You know, I really wanted to get at that sort of human aspect of it, that sort of uncertainty that they go through. But at the same time, it can be read as a polemic, and I've no problem with people doing that, you know, because we can always strive to do better and make it a better experience for our junior staff who, unfortunately, have a tendency to move away to other countries. And
and they explain it. I mean, we did stuff on this in recent days, and the idea that you're working 60 hours and you're not thanked for it.
Yeah, or certainly you feel like you're not being thanked for it, you know, in different ways. And I mean, I think there's lots that could be done there, you know, to sort of enable our, to give our staff. Not, and this isn't just limited to doctors, you know, it's really across the health system, particularly in light of what we've all been through, you know, over the last couple of years. And to really sort of give them time and space to develop and grow within their job. But these things don't happen by themselves. And I guess historically it was kind of the last thing people thought about, you know, and it was very much on the job training, which is what the book exhibits, you know, and there is a value to on the job training, as we were discussing a few minutes ago. I mean, yes, that's how you learn, that's how you develop the experience, but it must be married with other things like, you know, time to actually grow intellectually, to go on study days, to write papers and stuff like that. You know?
Now, your own experience that led you to writing. I mean, I've read an interview that you gave where you said that English was just English until a specific teacher came along who ignited the flame.
Right, Sidney Peck. I remember him so fondly. He was a Canadian gentleman, actually, and he burst into our class at the Christian Brothers in Dundalk. And really, before him, zero interest in English. Writing school essays were a pain, a chore. After him, it was about using your imagination, having fun with it, you know, using it
His question was, why are you guys not having fun with
this? Right, exactly. He was like, he took a pile of essays that we'd written and he was like, these are so boring. I know you guys are funny. I see it all the time. Why aren't you using your imagination on the page? And it was a real light switch moment. I don't know what age I was, 13 or whatever it was. And it just goes to show that, you know, if you come across a good teacher at that time in your life, it can literally change your life. I mean, I know it's a cliche, but, you know, it was true in my experience.
You also write about when you took a formal writing course and you were stateside, and the idea that you had no internet, no telly, nothing. You were living in fairly primitive residential accommodation for medics. So you started to write?
Right. I really had no excuse left at that stage, you know. I mean, because I'd been thinking, like, this is not unusual. I'm sure many people listening would have tinkered with the idea of, you know, or had this daydream of wanting to write a book, want to reactivate that pleasure that they would have had at some point and then they sort of go down a different path for a few years. I was no different. You have to do it in a sustained way. In my experience, I can only speak about my experience. You have to do it on a daily basis. You have to take it seriously and pay it that respect. And that I wasn't doing any of those things. But when I found myself in New York, living in this very basic accommodation in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, you know, I really had no excuses. You know, there was no Netflix, there was no television, nothing. And I luckily came across an organization called the Writer's Studio. I definitely encourage anyone listening who's interested in this to check them out. They run a very good online program. It's not too intensive, you know. It's a weekly, very much aimed at part-time folks like myself with other things to do. And I thought it was absolutely superb. So a little bit like Sidney Peck, it was genuinely a life-changing experience. You know?
Now, that didn't stop you pursuing your career, and you're now obviously a professional oncologist working away. Is it true that you write on the dart on the way to work?
It is indeed, yeah. I do a little bit before I leave the house, and then the dart is fabulous. It was a real discovery to me when we moved back to Dublin, and I live out in Howth, so getting the dart in and out is one of the, it sounds crazy, but it's one of the highlights of my day. You know, it's so peaceful and quiet. I'm one of the first on the train, so I always get a seat. Always guaranteed a seat, Pat. And and it's a great place to work. I actually wish my commute was a bit longer, you know, but I suppose the question about, you know, combining it with the day job is one that comes up an awful lot. I actually think that I've got a huge advantage having a day job, you know, and having a career that allows me to sort of be focused on the writing for incremental periods of time each day, but then to step away from it as well and not to feel mired in it, you know, because my wife is a full-time artist and I see how difficult that is, you know, to try and sustain that sort of self-belief day on day on day, you know, I'm very lucky that I can get to be focused, but then step away, you know.
It's interesting in the book, you know, the kind of things that these inexperienced interns are asked to do. I mean, when I was reading there about, you know, they might be asked to put in a catheter or something like that. The last person you want to put in a catheter is the fella who has not done it very often. You want the nurse who does it every day, day in, day out, to put in the catheter. The other thing is, it's the burns unit. Don't worry about them. The nurses there run that show. Yes. They're terrific.
Well, one of the very first things you learn when you become an intern is your complete reliance on the expertise of the nurses that you're working with. And a good nurse can save you so much bother and trouble and that's a very important relationship right from the first minute, and you learn it. It's one of these things that people explain to you ahead of time, but it's only when you're actually there that you really fully get it, you know.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that then the nature of that relationship will change as you go up the food chain. You become the consultant, and the nurse who was telling you as an intern what to do now has to defer. That's a pity.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think they have to at all. And
it's first name terms these days, isn't it?
Oh, it should be. I mean, I think Ireland, actually, since I've come back in 25 years now, I've noticed is a little bit retrograde in that respect. You know, there's still a lot of deference and calling doctor this and professor this, whereas in America, it's all first name terms, which I much, much prefer, you know, because it's just an unnecessary layer of difference and probably a legacy to an older time period when that was kind of all they had, you know. Whereas now I think it's much healthier if we all kind of work together, and that applies to patients as well as the other staff. You know,
it's very you still get your little barbs in, even though this is completely fictional. Like, don't go near the surgeons; they're desperate. I'll go to the medics every time. A medical oncologist.
I thought I'd have a little bit of fun there at their expense. You know.
All right. Well, look, it's a terrific book. It's called The Night Interns. It's published by Granta. It's in every good bookshop and some of the bad ones too. And it's author Austin Duffy. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thanks very
much,
Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Save big money on all lawn care products at Menards. Revolutionize your landscaping experience with our dig-free edging. A hassle-free solution that transforms your outdoor space effortlessly. Our innovative edging system is designed for easy setup without disrupting your lawn. Save today on all Mastermark dig-free edging at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.